it's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Thank you, Chad Erickson. It does on this Wednesday, and great to have you with us for the next 60 minutes. A lot to get into, including my man Sammy Arnell dropping by. Boy, what could possibly go wrong? Two white guys talking about the Negro League records being merged with Major League Baseball's records. I think we could have gotten, I don't know, an appropriate guest to talk about that, but it was kind of short notice and tough turnaround. And some of the comments I've been getting from people around baseball that I talk to, now I sound like Stephen A. Smith with my anonymous sources, but some of the people I've been talking to, there's been some very interesting feedback, if you will, about this decision by Rob Manfred of Major League Baseball. We'll talk about it in the next segment because I think a lot of us are kind of, I think people inside sports are kind of scratching their heads. On the surface, from the outside, sounds like a great thing, but a lot of people are scratching their heads. We'll talk about that. We'll also get into some NFL news today. Nico Collins gets a huge bag from the Houston Texans. Caitlin Clark scores 30 in another loss for the Indiana Fever. We've got some women's sports on the back end of the show, but we start things out in the NBA. My man Kurt Heelan is here. Pro basketball talk at NBCSports.com is his jam. He joked with me last night that I might be too big for him now after the Stephen A. Smith tweet, which is now reached, by the way, almost 2 million views as of the time that we started taping the show today. We'll be at 2 million by the time people around the country see it, which is still kind of crazy. I was saying off the air to Kurt, Antoine Walker followed me. Loving that, man. Nick Van Exel.
Those are fun players, by the way. Like Nick Van Exel is just one of the most entertaining, fun players to watch. Yeah. The league has ever seen.
Yep, Nick Van Exel was fun. Rex Chapman followed. T.O. So yesterday we got a like from Kevin Durant. We got a retweet from Terrell Owens.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, T.O. T.O. jumped in the game. He took some time away from doing push-ups in his driveway to check out what we were doing. It's crazy. Social media is just nuts. It really is. All right, let's move away from that. Let's talk about the Mavericks and T-Wolves. I'm going to tell you something crazy. Okay, I know we don't get into the gambling odds too much in our segments, but for a team that's down 3-1 and was down 3-0, and it just goes to show you that there is still some confidence in the Timberwolves. For a team that was down 3-0, you could get the Timberwolves right now. It's only plus 450 for them to win the series. They were down 3-0. No team's ever come back down 3-0. And the odds makers think there's a fairly decent chance that they could be the team to come back down 3-0. Are they nuts?
Not completely. I mean, look, every one of these games was close. There has not been a blowout, right? Like these, all four have been what the NBA would define as clutch, like within 5 points in the last 5 minutes. There have not been these crushing wins, which you, look, even in a tight series, you usually get one or two of these, right? Like you usually get a blowout here or there. It has not been that way. And the difference, it was pretty obvious. The difference in game four was Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns stepped up not only all game and had their best games, but stepped up in the clutch with big plays and big shots. And Luka Doncic was missing. Dallas was 3 of 12 from three in the fourth. Kyrie was not quite as dynamic. He was better though than, like I said, Luka struggled with his shot. PJ Washington missed shots. He's knocked down. You can go down the list. It just didn't fall for them. And if you're Dallas, you can say, all right, shrug it off. We can do better next game. But Minnesota grew. Like that's what I took. One of the things I took away from this was, don't you think they got a little better? They got a little more confident.
Yes and no. I still see some bad fouls and poor basketball IQ plays that sort of puzzle me. I think that number, and Vegas takes emotion out of it. That's the one thing. That's why it kind of surprised me. It just felt emotional when I see a number of 450 on the T-Wolves to still win the series when they were down 3-0. That's saying you think they have a decent chance to come back from down 3-0 to win the series. And I just find it impossible to believe that the Mavericks are in, if we just assume every game is going to be like this, the last three games, that the Mavericks are just going to collapse over the course of the next three games. I could see it getting back to Dallas for game six. That would not shock me at all. If I was going to place a wager on anything right now, in fact, I would say I'd place a wager that we do wind up back in Dallas for game six. And then all the pressure shifts to the Mavericks at that point, because you don't want to go back to Minnesota for game seven.
No, and that, look, you saw Kyrie Irving before the game when he was kind of mic'd up, and there's just the comment where he's like, this is their Super Bowl. This is just another game for us, like trying to deflect that pressure, right? Like, hey, what happens here doesn't matter, but it starts to. Game five matters. Like you said, game six becomes huge. We saw this last year. Remember, Miami raced out in the Eastern Conference Finals to a 3-0 lead on Boston, winning two of the games in Boston, just like Dallas did, then gave up the next three. Now, they went into Dallas and, I mean, into Minnesota. We'll try that with you third time. They went into Boston, Miami on that third one, game seven, and crushed them, right? It was a horrible Boston game. But they got that far. Like, it's not crazy to think you can start to push that. And if you're Dallas, now, like you said, the pressure's starting to shift. You really want to close it out in five, because Luka's knee, you'd like to give that the week off, man. You would like to give that a full week off beforehand, and I don't know that they're going to get there now.
Let me ask you something. Move to the Celtics here for a second. Obviously, for the sake of Porzingis, you like the rest. But do you like this much rest if you're Joe Mazzulla? It just feels like an interminable amount of time. You can't simulate, what playing in an NBA. I mean, you got to ramp down for a while and then ramp it back up. I mean, my God, I don't care who they play in game one of the NBA finals. I'm taking whoever's playing against the Celtics.
Porzingis will not have played in more than a month. So he's just, I think we saw it with Kleber. Kleber the other night. He was a little rusty. He was just a little tentative to take some shots. And it's understandable because he'd been out with a separated shoulder. He just was not going to come back gunning away. Porzingis is going to be the same way. He's going to miss some rotations. He's going to be a step slow. He's just not going to be as sharp. And you're right. You can't simulate that. And whoever comes out of the West, even if Dallas closes this thing out in five on Thursday night, they're sharp. They are battle tested. Yep. They will have come through it all, and they're going to come in there knives sharpened, ready to go. And I'm not sure Boston's – like, I think we've talked about this. I expect culture shock for Boston in game one. Whoever comes out of the West, whatever game, number of games, the West was so much harder to get through.
Yeah, I agree. Kurt Heelen will rejoin us coming up in about 20 minutes. We talk some baseball on the other side with Sam Yarnell. Major League Baseball instituting some huge changes that will affect the record books. That's next. Sports Wrap continues on this Wednesday. Appreciate you being with us. Kurt Heelen will return in 10 minutes to chat about the NBA, get his thoughts on the passing of Bill Walton, somebody I'm sure he came into contact with a lot as a guy based in Southern California. Also, Bronny James entering the NBA draft. Not that any of us are shocked by that. But big news coming out of Major League Baseball that I want to talk about with our friend Sam Yarnell, who is with us day two from the undisclosed hidden bunker that he is in. And get his thoughts on this decision by Major League Baseball that really made some waves last night. I think it took some people by surprise, but if you've really been paying attention to sort of the minutiae around Major League Baseball, it may not have been that much of a surprise, because Major League Baseball has been investigating and doing its historical homework on this for a while. So for people who haven't heard, if you've been sleeping under a rock for the last 24 hours or so, Josh Gibson is going to become Major League Baseball's career leader when it comes to batting average. He will surpass Ty Cobb, who had been the previous leader at .367, because Major League Baseball has decided to take Negro Leagues records for more than 2,300 players and incorporate it after they did this research project over the last few years. And there's plenty more where that came from, Sam, in terms of, what this is going to mean from a records point of view. You know, guys like Buck O'Neill will be impacted by this. Even Jackie Robinson is going to be impacted by this. Josh Gibson, who hit 466 in 1943, will become the standard for the highest batting average, 1943 with the Homestead Grays. Gibson also becomes the career leader in slugging percentage, OPS. He moves ahead of Babe Ruth at 690 and 1.164. So here's my perspective on this. And look, take it for what it is coming from me, okay? But my issue with this is twofold. I don't think most baseball fans were yearning for this change. I don't even think black baseball fans, and I can only speak for people I have spoken to since this decision has been announced. I don't speak for everybody. I don't pretend the person I spoke to speaks for everybody. I just don't think this was something that had to be done. That's the first thing. Second, if the argument, I think part of the play here for Major League Baseball is they are trying to extend an olive branch to blacks because the game is hemorrhaging black players. It still has a major problem in attracting black baseball players. That's why RBI was created so many years ago. I don't think this does anything to change the idea of black athletes coming towards baseball versus coming towards going and playing other sports. So I think that on those two reasons, in my opinion, I don't understand why baseball felt the need to completely reshuffle the records for Major League Baseball, which is, if you know anything about sports, the most hallowed records in sports are baseball. It's the home run record. It's the single season home run record. This is why the steroid thing was such a big deal to so many people. The baseball records are among the most sacred in all of sports. And now Rob Manfred, in his infinite wisdom, has decided to shuffle that up. What did you make of the decision, Sam? Especially as somebody who's younger than me, and I'm curious to know if younger baseball fans... I don't think younger baseball fans were sitting there going, man, I can't wait until they change the records. I don't get it.
So, I think that the main takeaway for me is that, and credit to Bailey Freeman, I saw him tweet this out last night and I thought it was really good perspective. We don't need Major League Baseball to come down as some almighty being and tell us that the Negro Leagues were in fact good.
Yeah.
And you know, we're going to put them in our record books because of that. Those of us who know baseball understand the history of the game and understand how great of a player Josh Gibson was, how great of a player Cool Papa Bell was, how great those Homestead Grays teams were. It's hard to justify this as anything other than Major League Baseball trying to do exactly what you said, extend that olive branch, Jason. But it feels almost like a little bit of a crass way to do it.
Yep.
Because in the baseball world, there was a general understanding and a mutual respect for the Negro Leagues and that era of baseball and the time that baseball was going through. Quite frankly, the ultimate answer to this is probably just expelling all pre-integration records. But we know, like you said, baseball is such a record-oriented sport. There's never a chance that they do that. At the end of the day, I think that this is kind of a mistake, but I'm very interested to see what the worldwide backlash continues to be.
One of the rationales here that is kind of perplexing to me that baseball used, and this was the historian, John Thorne, MLB's official historian, who said, the condensed 60-game season for the 2020 calendar year, again, because of COVID and all that, for the National League and American League, prompted us to think maybe the shortened Negro League seasons could come under the MLB umbrella after all. So they took a one-year exception that Major League Baseball had because of COVID, you know, the COVID shortened, you know, season. They used that as a rationale for allowing these shortened Negro League seasons to be considered. Again, I just... Go ahead. I'm just...
Let's not forget that that season, as much as the commissioner's office and Rob Manfred wants to continue to blame that on COVID, the fact of the matter was there were other leagues that were fully operational during that time. Mm-hmm. That season was shortened because of a strike, and the commissioner's office is very quick to help you forget that. So what? Now we're going to throw out the 94-95 seasons because of the strike? We're going to throw out that whole season that didn't have a World Series?
You bring up a great point. You bring up a great point, too. Because Major League Baseball was all but happy to kind of let that thing just play out in 2020. I remember I was doing shows with my friend Vlad at the time. They were all but happy to sort of just let it, because we had COVID going on anyway. We'll come back when we come back. We're coming back with Kurt Heelen. We'll talk more basketball on the other side. Continuing on this Wednesday edition of the show, and we continue with our friend Kurt Heelen, who does a terrific job. Pro basketball talk at NBCSports.com, kind enough to grace us with his presence on the show on this Wednesday. Everybody's got a remembrance of Bill Walton. I was sitting here last night, and I was watching Mike Breen tell an amazing story about his father, who was suffering with Parkinson's and was a military veteran, and I think he was in the Navy, and Bill Walton taking him to an aircraft carrier that he served on in San Diego, and how emotional he was, and how Bill Walton just basically held his hand for several days on this trip, and it was one of the highlights of Mike Breen's father's life. I was listening to Rich Eisen tell a story about Bill Walton wanting to pay for his Tesla windshield when it broke because of something Walton happened. And it's just, there is not a bad story out there, it feels like, about Bill Walton. I was lucky enough to meet him once. I shared this story yesterday. I only got to talk to him for a couple of seconds, but I introduced myself. I said, Mr. Walton, great to meet you. And he said, Mr. Walton was my dad. Call me Bill. And it was just, it was the most Bill Walton thing that you could, you know, that you could expect. Being in Southern California as long as you have, and reporting from there, and Bill Walton being there, I would imagine you had to have come into contact with him here and there.
Oh, yeah. Again, more short conversations and sure. acquaintance stuff, but like two things. A, the first couple times I met him, which was kind of a Clipper broadcast on Clipper broadcast, he would introduce and goes, "Hi, I'm Bill Walton. Like, I'm sorry, you're the 6'11 redhead. We kind of all know who you are," but he wanted to kind of introduce himself. But, and I'm sure your conversations came away, I will say this, even if you talked to him for like a minute or two, you came away with the vibe that you just talked to your best friend for 20 years, right? Like, he was warm and embracing of everyone in his circle, no matter how long you were in it. And I think the best tribute to him is that you and I and Mike Breen and Rich Eisen, we're all telling these stories. We don't talk about the basketball player, like the MVP, the two-time NBA champion, the guy who was maybe the best college player ever, kind of gets glossed over, like absolutely dominant college player at UCLA. That's secondary to Bill Walton, the person, which, man, we should all leave that kind of legacy behind.
Yeah, it's so true. I was watching a play from the famous play with the steal and the dunk against when he was with the Blazers, obviously, when they won a title. And you can't appreciate how good he was. And how shorted we were on what kind of career it could have been because of all the injuries that he dealt with.
The list of players we would have been, the Portland in particular, has been robbed of due to injuries. When you start adding in Greg Oden and Brandon Roy and all these guys, he has got to be at the top of the list, though, because he was Jokic before Jokic, the way he played with his passing and mobility as a big.
Yeah. The tributes have been well-deserved. Give me some thought. I want to talk to you about this, not from the perspective of Stephen A. Smith, but what he alluded to in that anonymous message that he read last Friday on First Take about Jaylen Brown. This idea of Jaylen Brown not being marketable because of a certain attitude or a perception of an attitude that he thinks he's just better than everybody else. Is that something that you've heard around the league and people you've talked to?
No, actually it's not. I've heard he's an amazing teammate. I think he's more serious than, say, Anthony Edwards, who's kind of this, yeah, man, I'm going to bring shoes to Micah Parsons for game six, kind of like joking around, affable. That's, I don't want to say he's like not friendly or he's ever been rude or anything with me or anything like that, but he's a more reserved, somewhat serious person. And maybe that, I don't know how that affects his marketing. He's, you know, versus other players who are a little more out there. But I also think, like, this is a really, if you ever talk to him, a very smart, very worldly person too, who's not, I don't want to say, look, he loves basketball, he's doing it, but he is not in this for the lifestyle. He is like, there are things in his life that are more important to him than this, and as it should be. And maybe that's it. I don't know. He won the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. He is, by the way, not a bad bet for Finals MVP. Tatum's going to be the low odds, but you can get decent numbers on Doncic, who is, if Dallas wins, he has to be the guy, and Brown. And that might be, is that a better play than just taking the odds on favorite? You know, it's something to consider. I think he's going to be in a brighter spotlight now because of what this is. And hopefully that ends up reflecting in, you know, in marketability for him.
I'll take Doncic at plus 270 because I think the Mavs are going to win the NBA championship. Tell me about what Ty Lue's extension in LA with the Clippers means for the Lakers coaching search. And it almost feels like to me we're at a point now where if they haven't hired somebody by now, it's J.J. Redick and they're just waiting until the postseason ends because J.J. said he wants to finish, you know. And it'll also give them a couple of days of PR, being able to sort of play on the hiring of J.J. Redick, the press conference, all that stuff when the season's over and not be sharing the spotlight with the NBA Finals or Western Conference Finals that are still going on. It just feels like it's J.J. Redick at this point, doesn't it?
A little bit, yeah. I think they're still within the organization trying to whether talk themselves into that, convince themselves that that's the right decision versus Borrego or whomever they would go as the other option. Look, are you hiring for the short term? Are you hiring for the next 2 years with LeBron? Are you hiring? I mean, they keep saying we want that, but we want a guy who commands the locker room. And by the way, develops players and is tight with Anthony Davis and all this. Look, I think first off, if you're the Lakers, you've got to be hiring for the short term. And I think they're just trying to decide. And the Laker front office is not a top-down, always conducive. There's factions, there's push and pull within the organization at times. And I guess that's true of a little bit of everyone, but it seems more so with the Lakers. And I think they're trying to talk themselves into this, or decide if this is really where they want to go, if they're better off another direction, or convince everyone to get on the same. I think maybe Jeannie is trying to build a consensus within her front office that's not really there right now. JJ does seem the front runner. Ty Lue's out. He was frankly always out. You were never going to take him out of the money. And by the way, stability for the Clippers. Whatever comes after the Kawhi Leonard era, they know what they're going to be as a front office and coaching staff.
That's Kurt Heal in Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. He does a terrific job there. Thank you, my friend. Enjoy the rest of the Western Conference Finals. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Something to consider coming up in 10 minutes. We'll do some NFL. Brandon McManus in the news for reasons you don't want to be in the news for. Nico Collins in the news for reasons you do want to be in the news for. That's coming up. Odds and ends as well. Caitlin Clark, we didn't mention it on the show on Monday or Tuesday, but she got her first win. That's about the only good news right now for that Fever team. So we'll get to that. Plus a pretty notable retirement from the world of women's golf that we'll get into as well. Sam Yarnell, let's talk some hockey. Boy, I tell you, NHL postseason has delivered. If you're not watching it, folks, you have been missing out. Panthers Rangers, third straight overtime game. And let me take a victory lap, as one is wont to do, because last week on the show, when we were handicapping this series, I said to Sam, the bet that I liked, looked the juiciest, was three overtime games in the series. We just had last night our third overtime game. That was going off at plus 750, I believe, over on FanDuel. Hope you went along with my prognostication on that and made some money. I wonder what four overtime games would be, because, I mean, would you doubt it at this point that we could get four overtime games in this series that is tied at two after the Panthers get the victory last night at home as they go back to Madison Square Garden for game five of this Eastern Conference final. But it just feels like both these series are destined to go seven at this point, which is great for hockey.
It is, and it does. I agree with you. I will also take my we'll take my half victory lap, I guess. Igor Shesterkin, 25 plus saves in all four of the first four games of the series. We need him to start. We need him to continue this. I do think for those of you out there who did tail with three games at most to go in this series, we do have a chance to start middling some things here. I'm looking at Shesterkin's saves prop for the following game, which will be game five, back in the Garden on Thursday. It's currently hung at 28.5. I might bet the under just to kind of guarantee my salvation there, and also have a little window where we can double up our money. I'll think about that and get back to you, but I think that this Rangers team is going to win this series. I know that Florida looked great last night, and they got very lucky with the power. They got lucky with the breakaway that led to the power play, and they got lucky with Sam Reinhart because Vinny Trocheck just didn't know what he was doing for a sec. Sam Reinhart left in wide open space, former Sabre. It's hard to say that Florida is going to win this series, though, because last night it just felt like they had all the puck luck in the world, and New York was still able to battle back in this game, Jason.
You know, in games that are so tightly contested like that, I know this is cliche, and it's sort of it almost sounds like a lazy take. And I've watched more of this series than I've probably watched any series, so it's not as if I'm not watching. But when I say this, it's going to sound like just sort of a generic statement, but it really does feel like in a series that is this close, in games that are this close, it feels like any one of these games turns on a bounce of a puck, a turnover in the neutral zone. It just feels to me like while I would like to say, I think the Rangers are going to win the series. It's so hard to say when all of these games are one goal games late. Even the first game where the Rangers lost, I think it was 3-0. I forget what it was, or 3-1, whatever it was. They had trouble scoring in that game. That was a one goal game midway through the third period, and only did it kind of bust open late. When you've got games that are this close all the time, you're talking a bounce of the puck. You know, it's. To me, it's difficult. It's difficult to handicap something like this, and especially if you look at it by the numbers. I think the Panthers have outshot the Rangers every game in this series so far.
A ton, and they did by a large margin last night.
Yes.
Now the quality of all those shots questionable, and obviously that what counts as a shot in the NHL always very. Anyway, we got to give credit, though, to Sergei Bobrovsky. I know that we just talked about the Rangers not getting a ton of shots on net, but the Rangers, in not getting a ton on net, they're very selective in their shots, and they only take good shots, it seems. So Bobrovsky's been very good on the other side for Florida. Really, this series is going to come down to which goalie can make the more clutch saves at the most, or at the most clutch point in the series. So
I
wouldn't touch a side right now.
Can I tell you what's interesting? Just looking at it by the numbers.
Tell me what's interesting.
ding. Series correct score. They're both plus 260 for it to end in seven. Panthers 4-3 is plus 260, Rangers plus 260. And that's odd to me when the Rangers have two of the final three games on their home ice. Feels to me like the number would be a little lower on the Rangers. I think the fact that you're getting them at the same price that you're getting the Panthers, I would take the Rangers in seven at plus 260.
That is, you're right. That is actually quite
interesting. It's very interesting.
Quizzatory, if you will.
Yeah.
I can't really do them because I guess it's because the Rangers are home dogs. The Rangers are home dogs in game five, very slightly. That's why it is. So the book is expecting a team in the remaining three games of the series to win an away game. Clearly, they expect the Panthers to take Florida in game five.
Hammering the Rangers tomorrow night. You heard it here
first.
Not
touching it.
Hammering the Rangers on Thursday night for a win at the Garden. Let's go, Rangers! I love it.
I like the Stars as dogs tonight.
Oh, yeah, there's another series. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Maybe we'll get Dennis Bernstein on. We're coming back. We got odds and ends 10 minutes from now to wrap up the show. Caitlin Clark, Lexi Thompson starring in that segment. But let's talk some NFL. NFL! Let's talk some football, baby. Sam Yarnell pops back into the picture, has entered the chat. Are you going back home? Are you going back home tomorrow? Are they letting you out of the underground bunker tomorrow?
Yeah, it'll be safe to return to Studio S for tomorrow's show. Don't worry.
Just making sure.
Studio S2. It's S2 now, okay. Right?
Okay. Just making sure. So let's talk about the NFL, and Brandon McManus is in the news for reasons you don't want to be in the news for. A pair of women filing a lawsuit, couple of flight attendants saying he did bad things to us. Sexual assault, never a good thing. Flight to London for last year's flight to London for a game last year. I would say flight to London for a game, but they play multiple games there. Two women, not named. Lawsuit filed in Duval County Circuit Civil Court on Friday night, seeking more than $1 million in damages. Said they were working as flight attendants on the Jaguars charter flight to London in September 2023. The flight, the women alleged, quickly turned into a party. McManus and other players disregarded the attendants' personal space, air travel safety, and federal laws, according to the report, and McManus allegedly recruited other flight attendants to the party and passed out $100 bills to try and get them to drink and dance for him. So apparently he thought it was a nightclub or something like that. These are the allegations, as sort of stated. First woman in the lawsuit said McManus tried to kiss her while she was seated during turbulence. He also allegedly grinded up against her twice while she was serving food and drinks. Second woman said McManus also grinded up against her during one of the flight's meal services. Said she confronted McManus about it, but he smirked and walked away. So this is all out there in the report. You can go and look it up yourself. McManus denied the allegations through an attorney on Monday night, said, to be clear, these are absolutely fictitious and demonstrably false allegations made as part of a campaign to defame and disparage a talented and well-respected NFL player. We intend to aggressively defend Brandon's rights and integrity and clear his name by showing what these claims truly are, an extortion attempt. So they've gone with the E word there. So he is a kicker now on the roster for the Washington Commanders, if I'm not mistaken, Sam.
Yeah. Yes. This is, wow.
It's just,
Doug Peterson. Yeah. What kind of operation? These Jacksonville Jaguars, man, they love being in the news. From the coach that was kicking the kicker to the employee that gambled away $500,000 on the company card to now the party flight that led to a sexual assault charge against another kicker. I mean, what is it with low-level employees in this franchise? Anyway. Yeah, certainly horrible. This is the worst thing that happens in professional sports, and we continue to see it happen in specifically one league that continues to refuse to do mm-hmm. anything about it and just kind of brush under the rug. Neither here nor there. I hope this guy's never in the NFL again. I hope the Commanders cut him tomorrow if all this stuff is true. The same lawsuit is representing these two women as represented the women that filed suit against Deshaun Watson. So you would have to think that they're experienced in these high profile sorts of cases. This is terrible.
Yeah, men behaving badly.
It does not get much worse than this.
I agree. Men behaving badly. From being in the news for the wrong reason to being in the news for the right reason, Nico Collins, congratulations. Dude's going to get paid. Yeah, and it's funny, when we talked last year about, what was it, Tank Dell who got hurt, and Nico Collins had to sort of step in, we were like, can he? And he did play. Quite well, but he gets paid $72.75 million on a 3-year deal. And it's funny, I went through last night, $52 million guaranteed, by the way, in that deal. Maximum value, though, of $75 million. He's 25 years old, 80 catches last year, 1,297 yards, which ranked him 8th in the league, 8 touchdowns. I mean, the guy had quite a season, and he's getting paid handsomely for it. But I was looking around. I mean, do you know where that puts him? Interestingly, where it puts him, because you don't think of Nico Collins in this regard. Let's see, if 72.75. So we're talking what, 24 million a year, basically 24.2 million a year, something like that. I mean, that puts him in the top 7. In salary. It actually puts him at 7th. He is the 7th highest paid receiver in the NFL. I mean, it's pretty crazy to think about.
It is, but take that with a grain of salt, right? Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, both far outside of that top 10. Both of those guys still on their rookie deals. And that was my biggest takeaway from this, actually, is that this is going to probably be the last contract before Justin Jefferson resets the market with his new contract that he'll get after this season.
$30 million is going to start becoming the norm. At this crop.
Well, the option that the Bengals have on Ja'Marr Chase for next year is $21 million, and they're going to have to pick that up because that's considered a good value at that point. The wide receiver market's going to be reset twice in the next two off seasons. Congratulations, Nico Collins secured the bag before it did.
A.J. Brown, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyreek Hill, the $30 million club right now, and they're going to have some company soon enough. Odds and ends are right around the corner on this Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap. Don't you go anywhere. All right, just about time to put the wraps on this baby, but before we do, it's important to remind you, if you have not done so yet, subscribe to the podcast for Sports Wrap. I called it a vodcast the other day, and my significant other said, nobody calls it a vodcast. They're all called podcasts. Not down with the lingo, apparently. Either way, go and subscribe now. It's on your favorite podcasting platform, whatever that may be, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, you name it, we are on it. And if you miss the show, if you want to go back and check something out, it's there every day. It's wrapped up in a nice little bow. It's about, 45 minutes. It's good for the drive to work. You're sitting in traffic. Even if you're just laying in bed, you can listen, you can watch, whatever it may be. All right, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. The end of another game for the Indiana Fever and another loss for the Indiana Fever. They are 1-7. They have not won at home yet, despite the fact that they are outdrawing everybody right now. Sparks, a little bit of revenge last night in Indiana, 88-82, the final. Sparks, by the way, just 2-4 on the season. Caitlin Clark did have 30 in the loss on 7 of 16 shooting. She was 13 of 15 from the line, just 3 of 10 from 3. So you got to do a deeper dive. You can't just look and say, wow, she had 30 points. Was it an efficient 30 points? Eh. 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 3 steals, 3 blocks, which is crazy, 7 turnovers, and she continues to find herself in foul trouble. She had 5 fouls again in this game. So defending is obviously an issue. The physicality of the game has obviously been an issue for her, because I got to be honest, a lot of times when it comes to her in particular, it looks like prison yard basketball. It's like prison yard rule. It's like that scene. You ever seen The Longest Yard, the remake of it with Adam Sandler, where he's in the prison yard and he's playing basketball against Michael Irvin, and Michael Irvin just elbows him in the jaw and he's like, "Did I get you, bro?" And it's like, that's what's going on in these games right now with her. Like, she is getting roughed up, and I'm curious to see between now and the end of the year just how much of a toll this sort of takes on her. And even last night after the game, her coach came out and said, like, what is going on here? Like, it feels like the game is being officiated differently when it comes to Caitlin Clark. Hey, if you had 8 games on the over-under, for how long before you started to hear the coach complain about how Caitlin Clark is being treated? You did all right. So that's where we are right now with Caitlin Clark.
Yeah. Well, with that Fever team too, the biggest thing to me, not the biggest thing, but a thing that I continue to notice, Aaliyah Boston's rebounding numbers down. It just seems like with Caitlin Clark on the floor, the other players feel like a weight's been lifted off their shoulders too much. I don't know. I think they'll figure it out. I'm very not worried about the Fever. I'd look to bet on them now, even though we're 8 games through a 40-game season. Like, we're talking a fifth of the way. We're nearing a quarter of the way through the season here, Jason. I think it's a good time to strike on the Indiana Fever.
I'm going to tell you who's looking really bad right now. And that's all the WNBA pundits, because they all came out and said, oh, well, nobody thought this was a championship team. Everybody thought this was a playoff team. And at 1-7 right now, it's hard to find a scenario where this team over the last, whatever it is, 32 games, plays well enough that they're going to wind up being a playoff team. What are the odds on them? I couldn't find odds on them right now to make the playoffs. It's not available. Indiana's regular season win total right now is 15.5. Jeez Louise. So right now they're basically telling you they're not making the playoffs. 15.5. Really?
Yep. You only need 15 more wins.
You need 15 more wins in the last 32 games. That means you think they're going to be a game under 500?
Yeah, I think they're going to be a 500 basketball team.
You are optimistic. The end for Lexi Thompson, who has decided to call it a career, kind of. And I think I think it's important to get into the nuts and bolts just a little on this, because she has announced that she's retiring at the end of the 2024 LPGA season at the age of 29, which obviously opened up a lot of eyeballs as to why would somebody who's won a major, I think won 14 times on the LPGA tour, why she would do that. The caveat is this. She said she's going to look at her schedule at the end of the year, and she's going to play part-time next year. She's tired of the grind. She's tired of the day-in, day-out work. She doesn't want to do it anymore. She doesn't have to. She's made, I think, 14, like, I think she's made something like $14 million, $10 million, something like that in her career. She's certainly made enough that she's probably going to be okay, whether or not she plays any more golf on the LPGA Tour. And here's the thing. At 29... Does any of us know what our full life plan was going to look like at 29? She says she wants to spend more time with her dog, for crying out loud. I would take a pretty good bet at the fact that she will come back and play full-time LPGA Tour golf at some point in the future. This is not it for her. 24 USGA appearances, 18 consecutive U.S. Women's Open Championship appearances, and 2008 U.S. Girls Junior Champion as well for Lexi Thompson.
Yeah, so the number that you mentioned in there is the 18 consecutive U.S. Women's Open championship appearances. She appeared in her first one when she was 12. Yep. She went pro when she was 15. She's been on the grind for almost 2 decades. Yep. She can call it quits. She can go part-time. She's earned it.
She'll be back. She'll be back. They all come back. It's going to do it for us. Thanks to Kurt Heelan. Thanks to you, Sam. I'm Jason Page. We'll see you back here tomorrow.